and the field of compassionate conservation, which is concerned with species and biodiversity, but also with individuals. Compassionate conservation frowns on views like, well, I don't like it that animals are being killed now, but it's okay to do so because this will prevent future killing. Traditional conservation science is pretty ethically challenged, and conservation has had a very bloody past, and it continues to do so. Jeannie, educate us.
Thanks, Danny. So the following is from a 2014 essay by ethologist and champion of today's topic on compassionate conservation. And that is by Mark Beckoff, who is an ethologist that we've talked and quoted from many times before. Should we kill in the name of conservation? We live in a troubled and wounded world where in which humans continue to dominate and relentlessly kill numerous non-human animals. In 2014, a Texas hunting club auctioned off an endangered black rhino in Namibia, purportedly to save other black rhinos and their homes in Namibia. At the time, the Dallas Safari Club said, quote, Namibian wildlife officials will accompany the auction winner through the Mangetti National Park, where the hunt will occur, to, quote, ensure the correct type of animal is taken, end quote. This, needless to say, is not a very comforting thought. This sale, in which an animal is objectified and treated like a disposable commodity, right? I mean, killing it indicates that it's disposable.
Right.
Raises many questions about how we try to save other species. One major question is, should we kill in the name of conservation? People disagree on what is permissible and what is not. Beckoff's take, and that of compassionate conservation, is that this is not an acceptable trade-off. The life of every individual matters. The world is in dire need of healing, and we must revise some of the ways in which we attempt to coexist with other animals. Some of these methods center on heinous ways of killing them in the name of conservation, or supposedly to foster coexistence.
I don't even know what that means, the last part.
Compassionate conservation stresses that the life of every individual matters, and trading off an individual for the good of their own or another species is not an acceptable way to save species. And there doesn't seem to be much evidence that killing works in any significant way anyway. Black rhinos do indeed find themselves trying to avoid humans that are out to kill them. But in Namibia, only 10 rhinos have been killed since 2006. Of course, this is 10 too many, but far fewer than have been killed in neighboring South Africa, where around 1,000 were killed in 2012 alone. Killing animals to save others sets a bad example and a regrettable precedent and is not the way to foster peaceful coexistence. When people say that they kill animals because they love them, this makes Beckoff and myself personally feel very uneasy because, frankly, I'm glad that I'm not loved in that way. Right?
Exactly.
Cruelty can't stand the spotlight, and it's important that news about these sorts of activities be widely disseminated and openly discussed, says Beckoff, and that is exactly what we're trying to do here, right?
Yeah. Did you get any more info about that kind of a group or these groups that do these sort of conservation killings? Because I'm assuming they're not real conservation groups that are actively taking money for conservation, and then on the side they're like, oh, let's kill one for some extra money. To me, it just sounds like hunting reserves, but...
I did not. I do know that we've covered issues in the past where, like, for instance, the killing of that very charismatic lion in Africa last year by the dentist. That was accompanied by that dentist paid a hefty price for the, quote, privilege of hunting that lion. And all that money is couched and portrayed in a way that it's supporting the local economy.
I never hear about which non-profit that money flows through and how it's distributed. And I'm sure you could go to Bill Gates or other people and say, hey, we're in dire need of 10 grand here, or we're going to have to start killing endangered species. And you could probably have an ethical auction to...
That's exactly... You know. That is such an appropriate point because, you know, these hunting groups... And this article is just about... hunting and conservation, and we're going to talk about another aspect of compassionate conservation when we start talking about the barred owl versus the spotted owl. But in this particular context where we're talking about hunters paying a huge amount of money for the, quote, privilege of killing just one animal, we are talking about a very specific circumstance of hunting and the ways we try to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I,
be skeptical of the efficacy of these canned hunts.
There's that. And then it's just trying to put a good spin on a very bad practice.
Right.
It's like they're trying to do their own PR.
So. Right.
You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino, speaking, and Danny Toms. And we're going to go on to our next story. Hang on here. We'll get it in a second. All right. So conservationists, bird watchers, and environmentalists have all been watching with sadness, frustration, and even horror at the way the conservation of the spotted owl has been proceeding. So you may or may not be familiar with the spotted owl, but you will after we get through this story. The following piece by Warren Cornwall was published in 2014 in Conservation Journal, which is a publication from the University of Washington. It provides some background on what's happening right now, and if we get a chance, we'll talk about what's happening right now with the spotted and barred owl and research going on in their name. The title of this piece is appropriately titled, There Will Be Blood. We usually think conservation means saving animals. But its history, which is the history of conservation, is tinged with blood. John Audubon, a patron saint of the American conservation movement, killed hundreds of birds, partly for sport and partly for specimens to pose for his paintings. Aldo Leopold, a father of ecological science, much beloved, endorsed killing wolves to increase deer populations.
Wait, don't. Today we say we have to kill the deer because there's not enough wolves. It's funny how this works.
Today, as climate change pushes animals into each other's overlapping territories and humans drive ever more species to the brink of extinction, the pressure to reach for a gun to help save one animal from another is stronger than ever. In recent years, the federal government has shot Arctic foxes to guard the nests of rare Steller's eider ducks. In Texas and Oklahoma, hunters blast cowbirds that take over the nests of endangered black-capped vireos. Sea lions have been put to death for the sake of salmon in the Columbia River. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers planned to kill 16,000 double-crested cormorants in 2015 to help those same salmon. But the most controversial case may prove to be that of the northern spotted owl. The spotted owl, an icon of the environmental movement, is a shy bird that favors ancient forests. I am an amateur birder, and I have never seen or heard one of these animals, nor the barred owl, but we shall carry on. Its declining numbers led to its listing under the Endangered Species Act, which brought to a halt most old-growth logging in Pacific Northwest federal forests in the early 1990s. Today, the migration of the barred owl from its original East Coast home and habitat poses a potentially fatal threat. Bigger and more aggressive than its smaller cousin, the barred owl has gradually pushed south in a seemingly inexorable wave since arriving in Western Canada in the mid-20th century. This is a modern phenomenon.
Hmm.
Wherever this bird turns up in large numbers, spotted owls start to disappear. Biologists suspect spotted owls abandon their nests when they are driven off by the barred owl, and in at least one case, a barred owl appears to have killed and eaten a spotted owl. Alarmed by the rapid decline of the remaining spotted owls, desperate biologists, federal bureaucrats, and environmentalists have hit upon a last-ditch bloody scheme. Shoot enough barred owls to create breathing room for spotted owls. After years of studying the pros and cons of various approaches, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service embarked on a 6-year experiment. This was starting back in 2014, in 4 locations in the Pacific Northwest. Trained marksmen killed 71 barred owls in the first season, a number that could grow to as many as 3,600 owls over the span of this experiment. The test is designed to show what it would really take to make a difference for the spotted owl. If the experiment is deemed a success, it could pave the way for death warrants for thousands of owls every year for decades, if not forever. It would be the largest known mass killing of raptors. Right now, it's just a small mass killing of raptors.
Yeah.
But if this experiment shows that it's effective, and then there's another question that comes into play. For bird lovers or for anyone with a soft spot for wild animals, this is a problem from hell. No one is happy with the options. Bob Salinger, conservation director of the Audubon Society of Portland, summed it up neatly. On the one hand, killing thousands of owls is completely unacceptable. On the other hand, the extinction of the spotted owl is completely unacceptable. And that's basically the problem we have here.
Yeah, and, you know, this is like a lot of solutions to these problems occurring at the end of a chain of events. And what's the root cause driving this? You know, this is a Band-Aid over your elbow, and it's going to rip off every year. You know, sorry for the imagery, people. That's I don't know if that's worse than thousands and thousands of owls being killed, but like, why are these barred owls migrating, and what did we do to cause that, and how can we stop that? That's the real solution.
Yeah, and looking at the root cause of what's causing the decline in the spotted owl, also, what's the root cause of this even being a solution?
Right.
Right, this speaks to the ethics of conservation biologists.
Well, how many of these people are hunters and gun owners whose solutions involve killing things? Because if you or I, you know, had to do this to save a species, if we believed it, right, we would learn how to shoot a gun and we would do it. And we'd be weeping the whole time and we'd be writing articles about how horrible it is. I'm sure people are lining up to go out and shoot and kill things, you know, and probably some of those same people are involved in the conservation organizations or leading it or friends or relatives of them, you know.
So, yeah. So how should humans get involved in this fight between two species? Do we step into the boots of people in the front lines of these owl wars? Would you open fire, as you said? Carry on, Danny.
So how many barred owls would you kill to save a spotted owl? 1, 100, 1,000? The calculus is straightforward for David Wernz, as many as it takes. Wernz is the science and conservation director for the environmental group Conservation Northwest, which is based in Bellingham, Washington. He sees the spotted owl as a rare native species threatened by a new arrival that will likely survive quite well, even if thousands are killed every year. So he supports an even more ambitious killing program than the one that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering. He likens owl removal to pulling a weed. Tens of thousands of dead owls are weeds to him. The politically charged history of owls in old-growth forest makes the case of the barred owl even more fraught with controversy. Since humans destroyed spotted owl habitat and brought the species to this dire moment, Wernz believes people have an obligation to save the last remaining ones, to which I would agree. It's really the methods we're talking about. Nevertheless, Wernz frames the killing of barred owls as primarily a scientific matter, not a political or ethical one. This is a view commonly espoused by conservation scientists trained to think in terms of the fate of entire species rather than individual animals. While he doesn't relish killing barred owls, Wernz sees it as necessary to protect a native species integral to the forest he loves. Biodiversity trumps squeamishness about bloodletting. I disagree with all of this. You know, there's many ways to reduce populations of these owls.
And we won't know until we start looking.
And we won't know until we start looking. It's the first answer is the gun, you know.
Yeah, and this is this. But when non-human animals are involved, this is, we don't know until we start looking. You don't know how good, for instance, a vegan diet can be until you start looking at it carefully. You don't know about alternatives to use of animals in biomedical research until you start looking. So it really is foundational to change our way of thinking and our way of educating the scientists and professionals who are making these decisions. So we had Toby Benedetto from the Good Food Institute on many months ago, and you know, that group is looking to fund scholarships and basic research at the undergraduate level,
right?
To grow a new crop of professionals and scientists who have different tools and see different solutions.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you pointed out earlier, like this is deeply entrenched thinking to the beginning of conservation, to look at the species and to solve some of these problems by killing the other competing species.
Yeah, and looking at species as dominant over individuals.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the basis as a human species we need to be thinking of is looking at each other as individuals, whether we're talking about like to go to Bill Mash's interest in, you know, the homeless population in Chico. We look at it as a population, but really it's comprised of individuals with hearts and souls and stories.
Yeah.
And I'd say the same thing applies to non-human animals.
They're much harder problems, but
they
don't need to be easy, you know.
So the article goes on. If you want to make a conservation biologist squirm, try this question. How do you think the animal feels? Scientists usually think in terms of populations and species. Individuals form the raw materials for the grand Darwinian drama of survival and evolution. Feelings are beside the point. But for some, the barred owl is a majestic creature endowed with animal intelligence, not a pest. Fish and Wildlife Service officials learned that at public meetings. They, the Fish and Wildlife Service, came to talk science. Many in the crowd, however, spoke of how they felt about the owls as individuals. A growing number of researchers are trying to bridge those two perspectives. They argue that the conventional approach to conservation risks ignoring the lives and experiences of wildlife, making for poor science and shaky ethics. Their new field, compassionate conservation, draws on a body of research documenting the cognitive and emotional lives of animals. Injured chickens, for instance, have been documented self-medicating themselves. Crustaceans learn to avoid pain, and they respond to stress in a way similar to that of vertebrates. And rats and dogs and even bees are capable of pessimism. The more we learn about how animals think and feel, the more we empathize with them, and the less we can ignore the suffering we inflict. And here I just wanted to do an aside to Jonathan Balcom's work on fish cognition, where they were a blank slate until you start looking at actually existing research and start putting together a picture of how complex they are. According to Mark Beckoff, the guiding principles of compassionate conservation are, first, do no harm, which means the life of each and every individual animal is valued. Trading off individuals of one species for the good of individuals of another species is not acceptable, Beckoff says. Yet for many people, the owl dilemma falls into the gray area where there is tension between the fate of the individual and the survival of a species. Over to you, Danny.
Yeah, we'll continue here. Warren Cornwall's 2014 essay, There Will Be Blood, goes on to say, even if we manage to negotiate the moral thicket of killing one owl to save another and emerge at the other end with a gun, we run headlong into a practical question. What's the exit strategy? Can we kill 10,000 barred owls every year forever? That's the figure some experts in the field use when they talk about what it will take to truly help spotted owls recover in the Pacific Northwest. On the optimistic side, some believe that as Pacific Northwest forests continue to recover from logging and more owl habitat opens up, the killing could slow down or stop after a few decades. So let's do 10,000 times decades. Others worry that new habitat will just fill up with even more barred owls, creating a never-ending killing operation. Quote, I think in the long run, we simply can't control barred owl populations on a large scale. It would be incredibly expensive, and essentially you'd have to do it forever, said Eric Forsman, a U.S. Forest Service wildlife biologist and highly respected spotted owl researcher. To date, studies on the effectiveness of lethal barred owl removal have been limited in scope and scale. In small tests on private forests in Northern California, spotted owls returned to nearly all their former nest sites after people shot barred owls that had taken them over, according to a researcher who took part in the experiment. Where barred owls were left alone, spotted owl numbers continued to fall. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, for its part, hasn't offered a long-term plan of attack. They're awaiting the results of their six-year experiment. That experiment is expected to cost $4 million, which is more than $1,000 per dead bird, and it just... I mean, how many owl nests could you build for $4 million?
It seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Yeah. And it will cover only 2% of the spotted owl habitat in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. The other 98% of habitat is the worrisome part. So that's not covered by even this trial approach of killing the barred owls, which might be somewhat effective. But, you know, what's $4 million is 2%, so whatever. Let's multiply that by a lot. Even if it's technically feasible, will the public get behind this open-ended mass owl killing with no clear exit strategy? Of course, they don't really let too much of the public know about this, which is what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. So this year, in January, this Fish and Wildlife Service program to shoot barred owls to see what effect that has on spotted owls, if it helps the spotted owl, has been challenged in court by two animal rights groups. And in January of this year, a federal appeals court, the Ninth Circuit, which covers California and other states, said, no, the experiments can go on, even though these two animal rights groups, as Friends of Animals and Predator Defense, said, no, this is a violation of what's called the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, because it pits, that act protects all migratory birds.
Right.
And so their argument was, oh, no, you can't kill one species protected by this act to conserve another species by this act. But there is a clause in that act that says you can do so. You can take some animals, take equals kills, for scientific purposes. But that more, that has been used in very small scale applications. Yeah. We're talking about here, even the Fish and Wildlife Service experiment,
right,
quote experiment, is large, even though it only covers 2% of the total habitat for these two owl species. So the appeal was denied, and the experiment goes on. And that was just in January of this year.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. One thing that I pulled out from an article I found on it was that the group Friends of Animals, in their opinion, they believe that the aim of the Fish and Wildlife Service continuing with this large-scale experiment is actually to kind of numb people to the mm-hmm. idea of killing barred owls, to make it standard operating procedure and not...
And then they start selling hunting licenses for them, I assume. And
it's interesting. In other articles I've read about the for the experiments, quote, I'm going to just use experiments in quotes here.
Yeah.
They have actually had to recruit and hire under contract mm-hmm. marksmen, and they, in order to kill a barred owl, you have to bait it. You have to call it in with a call, a sound that they make. And, you know, this is radio. I really should have queued up the sound of a barred owl, but I did not. Anyway, so you have to call them in with sound and then bait them like a dead mouse or something.
Yeah.
And then you shoot them when they land to take that bird. And one of the marksmen that was interviewed for one of these articles was just sucked. Mm-hmm. He just did not care to do it. And actually, he eventually left.
Well, good.
The system, because even if you're a hunter, you're not used to killing a raptor.
Yeah.
It's just a very different thing.
Right.
It's not like you're killing something for dinner, which isn't justifiable either.
Right.
But it speaks to a lot that it disturbed the ethical underpinnings of even a hunter.
Right.
To do this. So I hope that folks found that sort of interesting. I know the story's not over, and there will be updates on this never-ending battle, because it's a big question.
You know, I mean, it just, as Bill says on his show, you know, we have to be better humans, you know. We have to aim higher. We have to be more aspirational. I mean, this is just a pathetic six-year study. You got to do this for 6 years even, you know. It just doesn't make much sense to me.
So anyway, it's interesting. As, you know, as government entities have the responsibility to preserve species.
Yeah.
And it's part of also, like, we have this legislation, the Endangered Species Act.
Right.
Is designed to protect a species and not the habitat of that species. We've talked about this in connection, say, with elephants.
Right.
Right. You can conserve elephants and breed them in zoos, but...
Right. They never get back out.
If they have no place to go back to, what are you actually accomplishing?
Right. Right.
So, you know, I don't think we'll ever see... under this administration, any revised environmental laws, but it would be nice to see another some other legislation that had the power of the Endangered Species Act,
right,
to compel protection of habitats. And so, excuse me, and some of that's, we see that with water regulations, perhaps, because that is foundational to most habitats, but anyway. So this is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio.
And now it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar Events. Get out your calendars, notebooks, right on the back of your hand. What do you have, Jeannie?
Yeah, thank you, Danny. I'm just going to have a couple events here. The main one is coming up on March 17th. The Cooking for Compassion and Health series continues with Batch Cooking and Storage. This is a cooking series hosted by the Chico chapter of Dharma Voices for Animals. And this is a cooking class that will be on Saturday, March 17th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Sky Creek Dharma Center. This class is going to be led by Nick and Nancy Matthews of Plant-Based Chico, and they'll be sharing the how-to of batch cooking and storage. If you want to prepare healthy meals and save on time and money, this is your class. You can get tickets at brownpapertickets.com. So, yeah, the gist of this class is cook on one day, eat for six more, including like desserts and all your meals. So you have lunch at work and such.
Pretty important for busy families and busy working people.
Yeah. And then also we have Steve Earlston from Vegan Outreach. He's going to be leafleting at Butte College tomorrow, March 8th, from 7:45 to 1 p.m. And if you see him on campus, take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or half hour and help him leaflet campus with Vegan Outreach pamphlets. And then Thursday, March 8th, from 1:30 to 3:30, and Friday, March 9th, from all day, 7:45 to 2 p.m., he'll be at Chico State. So if you see a friendly guy on campus handing out leaflets for Vegan Outreach, stop, say hi, tell him Non-Human Radio said hi.
And, Steve's a great guy.
And give him a hand. And that is all that we have for the calendar. We have one last piece of business to take care of, and that is the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
The animal rights quote of the week is from an essay by Mark Beckoff, PhD, who is a professor emeritus of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Colorado Boulder, and co-founder with Jane Goodall of Ethologists for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Compassionate conservation stresses that the life of every individual matters, and trading off an individual for the good of their own or another species is not an acceptable way to save species.
Hear, hear.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to Guillermo Mash and Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next, 6 p.m.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our fellow non-human earthlings who would rather not be killed than eaten, hunted, raced, experimented upon, baited, and shot at by trained marksmen and or otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind,
and go vegan.
Every action has a reaction.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.